Welcome to My Life, Chassidus Applied, episode 482. This program is in loving memory of Miriam Bas Eliyahu, Altoiz Allah HaSholem, and in merit of Baruch Ben Yomin Ben Menucha Lana, Altoiz, Yukusil Ben Lei Rochel and Rochel Bas Liba Farkash, dedicated by Pinchas Todris and Miriam Ben Miriam and Sarah Bas Rochel Altoiz. Well, the war continues to rage on, to our chagrin, to our dismay, with Rachmana Litzlan, souls, precious, precious young soldiers being lost in the ultimate and greatest noble act a person can do, a Jew can do, which is to protect and defend the innocent citizens of Eretz Yisrael. And we're all wondering, when is this nightmare going to come to an end? We've done many, many mitzvahs, such Avos Yisrael that has been unprecedented, the coming from every part of the world, the soldiers themselves, look at their way, their attitude, their simcha, the Mesiras Nefesh, unity that has not been seen. Not saying everything is perfect, but unbelievable things. Who is a nation like the nation of Israel on this earth? Hashem looks at us and he can be very proud. As I said, we're not perfect, but there's much to be proud of. And yet we're still dealing with this enemy. And it's not just an enemy, we're talking about real sakana, real danger. Now, I am proud to say, among all the different things that people have done in great mitzvahs, that as we speak, we've done a special edition of Torah Meaning for Life in Hebrew, HaDerech L'Chaim Shel Mashmut, which is, as we speak, being distributed to soldiers in Gaza, in the front lines, in the north, all over the country. Just heard from a colonel who said, we have enough, more than enough, physical ammunition. What we need more than ever is spiritual ammunition, so thank you for this. Someone told me about the fighting going on in the southern Gaza now. And in the evening, the soldiers get together and they read from the book, especially the sections where the Rebbe speaks about the power of Tzahal, their Mesiras Nefesh, their sacrifice, and they are literally being the highest and the holiest possible level, and how it gives strength. So by no means is this the only thing, but it's gratifying to hear that we each can do a little part in this effort. But still, Ad Mosai is the big question. So what more can we do to help win the war that continues to rage on? Unfortunately, this question goes back from the beginning of time, that whenever we felt we had done, it seemed like there needed to be more done, whatever the reason was. Why? We don't always know Hashem's plans. Now, obviously, there's always human errors, but then there are things that we do great things. But we never give up, like in any battle. Even if there's a setback, and even if something hasn't worked, you try something else. You go from one direction, a different direction. So the same thing is spiritually speaking. As much as we've done, we have to do more. And we can't really measure it. Obviously, we would have loved to believe and love to have seen that what we did accomplished what had to be accomplished. But even if not, or if it accomplished much and there's still a little more to be done, so we have to increase even more in our Torah, in our Veda, in our Gemilas Chasodim, in learning Torah in a battle way, Mochamta Shel Torah, not just business as usual, with extra effort and extra diligence and waking up earlier. And the same thing with the second Aveda Tefillah. We know Tefillah accomplishes things. Praying to Hashem for the protection of the Eden, of the soldiers, of Jews everywhere, of people everywhere, innocent people everywhere. And finally, the third pillar, Gemilas Chasadim, Zdokeh, in every possible way. And this, of course, includes Avos Yisrael, Ahdus Yisrael, going out of our way to be kinder. And it's easy to fall back into a more comfort zone and saying, okay, you know, it's true, it's over 3 months of this war. So time passes. You sometimes don't feel that sense of urgency. When you're on the front lines, you have no choice. But we have to put ourselves in the front lines, spiritually speaking. And we continue to fight and we continue to intensify wherever possible. And there's always more that can be done. And this includes, in addition to the special mitzvahs that have particular zgula, particular feature that protects tefillin. They see Shem Hashem Nikra Lecha, specifically Tefillin Shel Rosh, Mezuzah, Shem Medalsis Yisrael that protects. Tzedakah I mentioned, Tatzel Mamovis, but as a special power to protect. Chinuch, especially of young children, Mipi Eilim V'Yenkim Yisadet Te'ez L'Hash B'Sevim Misnakim, from the mouths of young children, Eiz is Teira, Ein Eiz El Teira, the strength of Teira. And that eliminates, annihilates the enemy. And everywhere, and using technology and using information and educating people in what is right and what is wrong, to have a clear moral compass, this is the time where we have to rise to the occasion. And I've said this many times, but we have to constantly refresh and renew that sense of urgency. Why have all our beautiful good deeds not ended the war? Well, as I said, we don't always know the answer. Let's put it this way. Every tefillah, every prayer, every good deed, every Torah accomplishes something. It may not have finished accomplishing at all. It opened the door. Maybe more doors need to be opened. So we don't know exactly that measure. That's up to Hashem. But we have to continue doing and forging ahead as Jews have always done. So there's no answer why it's not ended the war. We continue, and together with the military side, we have the spiritual side of the war, we will prevail as we have always prevailed. And God ultimately will save and protect, and we will march into Mashiach, and we will march into an era of permanent peace and permanent goodness in this world. No more evil, no more destruction. You need amunah, you need betachin. Faith, trust, but also actions. In a sharper turn, someone says, after all that we have done, can we demand that God finally put an end to this nightmare? The way someone wrote it is this, and this is, echoes the tone and the voice of many people writing. You would think that with all the increase in Torah mitzvah since October 7th, Hashem would be happy and would increase protecting us as He had promised. Has promised. But every day we hear more tragedies of soldiers being killed in Gaza. When do we stop saying we don't understand Hashem's ways and demand that Hashem stop treating us this way? It's illegal in the Torah to withhold wages from a worker, and Hashem is withholding our wages for serving Him. Can we sue Hashem in Bezdin? Well, we've tried, and then we, of course, go Daven Minche, as the famous story goes. So, we do this at every tefillah, especially during the Yom Neroim. We invoke psukim. We prove to God this is what you do because you yourself wrote this in the Torah. So by all means, and it's not a chutzpahdika thing if you do it in the right way. Hashem wants us to daven. Hashem wants us to demand. We have to worry about Hashem's being secure in His position. But you have to also, at the end of the day, there is one God. The same God that we have questions about is the God that we need more than ever. So you also want to be on His good side, so to speak. Not to say, God forbid, anyone suggesting otherwise. My point is to channel our frustration into positive actions. That's what pierces heavens. Moshe Rabbeinu showed us, as he prayed for the Eden after the Chet HaEgel, 80 days and finally prevailed, Yom Kippur. So we will continue what we have to do. We will never give up. And we hope that Hashem have Rachmanis already and ready to do what He has to do, even if we don't finish everything we need to do. So I say that as a bracha and as a haftacha and as a promise, as we've been told. I thought a good segue is an interesting, it's not digressing, as you'll see in a moment, it connects. This past week, I remember growing up with the Chazan, Tzvi Tzatzkes, Yehim, and Rabbi Edel Zaltzman, Yibod L'chaim, L'chaim, with two Chazanim. They came out similar time from the former Soviet Union. They came to America. The Rebbe very much was Makar of each one of them. Tzatzkes now passed away this past week. That's why I'm talking about it. And I've gotten quite a few questions about his connection. What, with the passing of Cantor Tzvi Tzatzkes, what can you share about his connection with the Rebbe? As I said, I remember by Fabrengens, the Rebbe asked him, as I said, Berel Zaltzman, Yabod L'chaim, L'chaim as well. But we're talking about Tzatzkes now. I remember the Rebbe asking him to sing different Nigunim, Russian Nigunim. One that stood out was a famous song called Ech Di Zimlak, Ech Ti Zimlak, a Russian song. Rebbe said, I remember by the Fabring Yud Tes Kislev and then Yud Beis Tammuz or Yud Gimel Tammuz Tov Shin Lamed Beis, 1972. And he was, I think, with his casket that he arrived. And then later years by Kesha Bracha, a number of there are videos out. It was a very, this song particularly seemed to be a song that captured the Rebbe's attention in a very powerful way. So that's a great schus, but also coming from the Mesiras Nefesh of the Russian Jewry, the songs they sang under their oppression and their Golas Mitzrayim. So it has special chavivus, a special precious part in the Rebbe's heart, because it was reflecting how the Eden in the most difficult times not only didn't give up, but they sang songs of hope and betochen and Hashem. We all know the song Nikava, another Russian song, Nothing But Hashem. So someone asked the question, so that all captures a very good lesson for today. That's what I meant by the segue, that even in difficult times, we find the spark, we find the song, we find the power, the trust that helps us bind ourselves to that which is above and not allowing us to fall below. So someone asked, what is the meaning of the song Ech Ti Zimlak that the Rebbe instructed him to sing on various occasions? I mentioned some of them. So let me translate it. It's a song in Russian. It's an interesting song, because in Russian there's always a certain tongue-in-cheek. And a loose translation goes like this. Someone wrote, well, let me read the full question before I do the translation. Sadly, Cantor Tzatzkes passed away this week. As a child, I remember him singing Russian songs during Kesher Baruch, and the Rebbe always enjoying the songs and making lebedik and urging everyone to sing and clap along. But since I don't understand the Russian language, I never understood what the songs meant. Can we ask Rabbi Jacobson to please explain the history and the meaning of the song Ech Ti Zimlak? Thank you. So the loose translation goes like this. My friend, why be a fool? Let me explain it to you. Let me count for you. And the song begins with a count. 14, and the song actually begins, like, you know, who is one? That famous, who is one? One is God. Then it says, who is two? And who is three? And who is four? It goes all the way to 14. And that's what he would do, Tzatzkes. He would sing it from one to two, three, four, then go down from 14 to 13, all the way back to one. So the song begins, who is one? One is our God, as in heaven, so on earth. And then the next part goes, who is two? Two are our tablets. Who is three? Our fathers. Who are four? Four are our mothers. Who are five? Who are five are the books of the Torah. Who is six? Six are the books of the Mishnah. Who is seven? Seven are the days of the week. Eight are the days until the circumcision. Nine are the months until birth. 10 are our commandments, this week's parsha. 11 are our stars. We're talking about the stars in Yosef's dream. 12 are our tribes, the 12 Shvatim. 13 are the godly attributes, Yud Gimel Midas Harachim. 14 are the books of Rambam, Yad HaChazak, Yad. And then we go, after you've read the 14, you go down from 14 all the way back to 2, and then, and who is one? One is our God. As on heaven, so on earth, one is our God. And it concludes our Jewish service and our Jewish friendship, which was always the end of the song, the climax. So this was a song of defiance, a song of connection, a song of deep faith and trust that he would sing. So it's his chus So in a time like this, this is what we do, that even when we have all the havoc and all the difficulties going on around us, a song like this connects us to what's the priority, who is one. It's Hashem on heaven and on earth. The Jewish people, the uniqueness of the Jewish people. Okay. So I think we can invoke that in a time like this as well. This song, other songs. And that keeps us going strong, keeps us connected, keeps us giving us, infusing us with the faith and confidence we need to get through all our challenges. Since this week is also Chav Bei Shvat, it's the 36th Yahrzeit, an Ilula of the Rebbe Tzon Chaim Mushke, Chav Bei Shvat Tov Shemem Ches, the Rebbetzin, of course, two partners as one. So I think let's talk a little about Chav Bei Shvat. Got a lot of questions. Here's a good opportunity. You can pose all your questions completely anonymously at chassidusapplied.com, where you can find the full repository of all the previous archives, the forum that I just mentioned where you could ask questions, plenty other resources around Chassidus. Okay. So let's take a selection of questions that came in around Chav Bei Shvat, and let's start with what is Chav Bei Shvat? What is its message? So its message is that the Rebbetzin and the Rebbe, as I said, are one. The Rebbe, even the Tzemach Tzedek used the expression, but you can see it also after Chav Bei Shvat. Ein malke b'lei matren nisim. A king is not complete without his queen. Chaz v'shom to say the Rebbe is not complete, but there's something in the manifestation, both on a ruchnizdika level. We saw it also begashmis. We saw the changes and how it affected the Rebbe. We may never understand. The same thing happened with the Tzemach Tzedek after the stalkus of the Rebbe Tzon Chaim Mushke of the Tzemach Tzedek. Both same names. And there too, the Rebbetzin passed away first. And also 5 years earlier, Tofresh Chof Aleph, the Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek was Tofresh Chof Vov. So, 5-6 years, yeah. So that's number one. So everything we learn about the Rebbe, everything we take about the Rebbe, even though the Rebbetzin was much more discreet, not such a public figure, but behind the scenes, this was the partnership. So the Eibishter made it, Zocher Nekeva Boreisam. As the Rebbe said about Yudalit Kislev, when he married the Rebbetzin, this is the day that I bound me to you and you to me. So we see from that tremendous power. And therefore, the Rebbetzin Stalkos, like the Rebbe says in the Sichas, like the Stalkos of a Tzaddik or Tzidkonis, it's a day when all her Aveda and everything she did together with the Rebbe, and all her own Schusim as well, as the Rebbe pointed out many times, all that Aveda gathers and is revealed, and is Poel Yeshua is Bekerav Aretz. It affects us, so it gives us strength. So in a week like this, and especially on Chav Bei Shvat, it gives us strength, her merits, her Mesiras Nefesh. Much of it we don't even know. And indeed, that's why the Kinnus HaShluchas, the annual Shluchas conference, is always done this week, the end of this week, which is around Chav Bei Shvat, to invoke and to draw from that power. So that's, in general, in all times. A time like this, when there's a war going on, when we're challenged, there's no question that the power of a Tzaddik Tzidkon is especially critical. In a famous Sikha, Tov Shinun Beis, the last Sikha the Rebbe would speak to us, Leisata, about Chav Bei Shvat, Kuntur is called B'chol Yevorech Hisson, the Rebbe actually handed it out to everyone. So the Rebbe begins the Sikha talking about Chav Bei Shvat, he talks about B'chol Yevorech Yisrael. Chav Beis is B'chol, that these are the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet, the name of the date of the Yahrzeit is 22 letters. Because all brachas are nimshach through the Aleph Beis of Torah. And through her, in her, and by extension to all of us, all the brachas come. That's the Rebbe begins our sikha, powerful sikha. We need brachas now more than ever. Then the Rebbe goes on in a very intricate way. I would definitely advise reading that, learning that sikha. It gives a lot of insight into the deeper significance of the Rebbetzin, both in the day Chav Bei Shvat and her name Chaim Mushke, and other details. I'll mention some of them as we go along here. So then, of course, then the question is, now in these special times, what lessons can we learn from the Rebbetzin about how to win the war against Hamas and their anti-Semitic supporters? So, what I say now, obviously, is based on my understanding. You know, we don't have anything from the Rebbe himself regarding these times. But as I said, the power of Atzid Karnis, the power to give brachas, is definitely applicable now. And we know, like all mothers in Israel, like Rachel, Mevak al Baneha, she cries for her children. And that's not just a cry. It's to invoke compassion in heaven. And that compassion should be transmitted to us here below. So that's overall. But more specifically, I was thinking, where do we find a battle that the Rebbetzin was engaged in? So there was the Milchama around Heytevis. And she played a crucial role. The Rebbe said, but her statement, when she was asked, who does the Sfarim belong to? Your father or the Chassidim? She said, my father himself belongs to Chassidim. The male of his Sfarim belonged to them. And that became the cornerstone, the key element, the Rebbe says, in the victory of Heytevis. So I was thinking, what can we learn from that in this battle today? Obviously, it's a very different scenario. But what you learn, what was the main point here, was what a Rebbe is, what Torah is, what Eden are. It's not something that can die. It's not something that is even up to personal property, private property, subject to inheritance. So it wasn't depriving anyone from it, because she herself was a daughter of the Rebbe. So if anyone had a claim, she could say, I'm his daughter. But she said he belonged to Chassidim. It means Torah, a Rebbe, belongs to Chassidim, he belongs to Eden. So the lesson today is that we are indestructible. If something becomes private property and passed on through heirs, of course, I'll be Torah, is the concept of Yerusha. But that's something has basically something that is mortal, something that's finite, defined. But there's the concept Tzibur Ein Emes, that a public, a community, in this case the community of Eden, the community of Chassidim, the Gudas Chassidim Chabad, which essentially means the community of Chassidim. That's something that's what the Rebbe belonged to. The Rebbe is a Nitzchi, and therefore the Chassidim and the Chassidim are Nitzchim. So in a time like this, it tells us that the Eden are not just individuals. They represent God in this world. And just as Ani Hashem Leishanisi, God is immutable and never changing. Ubnei Yisrael Leichalisa, that's the end of the pasuk, that the children of Israel will never be annihilated, God forbid. So it's a lesson of understanding that when we connect to that Nitzchius, to the eternity, that Rebbe belongs to Chassidim, and the Chassidim do what they have to do, and with Achdus and unity, as the Tzemach Tzedek said, that alone will help them march toward Mashiach and help them be victorious in all their battles. That's one thing that comes to mind. We also know that Rebbetzin played a role when the Friedrich Rebbe was arrested. And I'm sure many things we don't even know. What happened in Nazi Europe when they were in Berlin and then later in France. A Mesiras Nefesh, I'm sure, many, many levels. So on a day of Chav Beishvat, when all that Aveda comes together, it gives us strength. Poyel Yeshua is Bekedav Aretz, to bring salvations and redemptions. Bekedav Aretz, in the depths and the abyss of Aretz, in Gaza, and where every Eden are now embedded, so to speak, enmeshed in battle. So the Rebbetzin's Keiches, the Rebbetzin's Brachas, B'choy Yivarech Yisrael, gives strength, direction and guidance. Okay. And that we absolutely will prevail over all our challenges. A question someone asked, why do many people refer to the Rebbetzin as the Friedrich Rebbe's daughter or the Rebbe's wife instead of listing all the accomplishments she did on her own? Instead of describing her in her own right? Good, interesting question. And a very balbatish, simple answer is because the Rebbetzin was more discreet, she was behind the scenes. So we know her as the Friedrich Rebbe's daughter first, and the Rebbe's Rebbe's. Could also be Kfud de Bas Melech Pnima, that in general, the real power, the dignity of a woman, especially of a Rebbetzin, is more discreet, it's more beneath the surface. So it's not meant in any, God forbid, any diminishing way suggest that she's just an accessory, so to speak, of the Friedrich Rebbe or the Rebbe. Because the Rebbe said many times, he said clearly, she has the power to give brachas, she has her schusim. And whatever the Rebbe was told about her complimenting her, he said, that just touched us as the surface. So we know there was greatness. And also on a very practical level, it's not what people say, it's just how people express themselves. I don't see any issue someone could tell a story about the Rebbe in her own right, as I said. But maybe on the deepest level, at the end of the day, the Rebbetzin is like a king and a queen. They come together. And in a chanami, you talk about the Rebbe, you don't say the Rebbe is the Rebbetzin's husband. But that you see in common in Yiddishkeit. You talk about a family, sometimes goes the name of the husband. But Megillas Esther is called by the name Esther, not Mordechai. Not Mordechai v'Esther, not Esther Mordechai. So it's just a matter of context. In no way does it mean to suggest any type of lack of respect. But it's interesting to point out, and I thank you for making that clear. Chassidus calls the Rebbetzin Malko Malchus. Malchus, Kabbalah, Zoyar, Chassidus explains, Les Lamer Gamoklum. She has nothing of her own. But that doesn't mean she has nothing. It means her whole being is a bitl-dikka being. And that's why Malchus is Eila Ada Kesen and goes even higher than all the Mashpia, that the Mashpia is Mamshech. So though the moon technically receives light from the sun, but Chassidus explains, Eishas Chayel Ateres Baila, and he gave it to save of Gever, that the Osid lover will see that, then truth is Malchus is rooted in a much higher place. So don't dismiss Bittl as nothingness. Bittl means that you don't see the Giluim, you don't see expression, but you see Etzem, if you're able to see. It reaches a place that's beyond expression. So maybe that also helps understand it on a deeper level. Well, we know the custom that the Rabbeim have, the Rebbe mentioned a number of times, Erev Rosh Hashanah, before Yom Tov, the Rebbeim would go in to see the Rebbetzin and wish them a good year. And the Bashtazik explanation is because Rosh Hashanah is Binyan HaMalchus, the Rebbetzin's Malchus. Now, above all, we know that after Chav Beishvat, we saw what kind of impact it had on the Rebbe. So sometimes when the light is shining, you don't always see. When the Rebbetzin was physically not here, it had tremendous impact. Again, we don't always understand all the details of it, but clearly the Rebbe was not the same person, however you understand that. So you can see from that the power of the Rebbe. The fact that we don't know all the details, yeah. The Rebbe even asked Rabbi Pekarsky then, the Rav, he said, what's the din? If a son-in-law's wife passes away, does he still have a connection to his father-in-law? The mere havamin of such a question, the consideration. Rabbi Pekarsky was wise enough and Pialocha said that immediately. Absolutely, there's no change. But just to show the Rebbe's critical role in the Rebbe's eyes. Okay. So this brings us back to what I said before. What did the Rebbe mean when he said marrying the Rebbetzin bound him to his chassidim? Wasn't the Rebbe already bound to the chassidim by being a descendant of the Tzemach Tzedek? Not necessarily. Let me explain what that means. Of course, he was one of the grandsons of the Tzemach Tzedek. With grandsons, there are many, multiple, tens and tens, I don't know, maybe even hundreds. So there's no question that connects him. But the Rabbeistva, to be Rebbe, was generally associated either with a father or father-in-law. Tzemach Tzedek was a son-in-law of the Mittler Rebbe, a grandson of the Alter Rebbe. All the other Rebbeim were sons, and the Rebbe was also a son-in-law. So as much as the Rebbe was connected to the Chassidim through the Tzemach Tzedek, which is generations before, the real connection obviously comes through the Friedrich Rebbe, as a mamal mokum of the Friedrich Rebbe, but not just a grandson of the Tzemach Tzedek. Remember the Tzemach Tzedek, his sons, even though they were called Admur, but it was the Rebbe Marash that became the next Rebbe. And the Rebbe Marash was not the direct lineage to the Rebbe. It was Baruch Shalom, his older brother. So by marrying the Rebbe Tzion Chaim Mushke, that bound him through the Friedrich Rebbe to us as a Rebbe. Okay. Did the Rebbe explain the significance of the Rebbetzin's passing in connection with the number 11? On the 22nd day of the month, which is twice 11, of the 11th month. Shvat is the 11th month when you start counting from Nisan. And the answer is absolutely that same Sicha, B'chol Yevarech Yisrael, Tov Shinun Beis, that the Rebbe handed out to everyone. Very powerful Sicha. He talks about the Tkufis of Nisias, the Friedrich Rebbe, then going over to the Rebbe, the seventh generation, and then Tov Shemem Ches, clearly a watershed moment. And he explains like this, the Friedrich Rebbe was connected to the number 10. First of all, the Friedrich Rebbe's name, Yosef Yitzchok, both Yud, 10. Friedrich Rebbe's leadership was three tkufis of 10, 30 years. Tov Resh Pei, 1920 till 1950. Three decades, full decades. We know the Friedrich Rebbe emphasized that Yud, especially in the last year of his letters. He started making the Yud of Yitzchak much larger. Passed away, Stalkus and Ilula of the Friedrich Rebbe. Yud Shvat, Tov Shin Yud. All Yuds. Yud, Chassidus explains, is the Shlemus of Elam. 10 spheres. Misper HaShalom, the complete number. The entire cycle. Entire spectrum. Yud Aleph represents the Maila Mishtalshlus, that one above 10, Keser, transcendence. We know the Kavona is that Hashem said, make a dira b'tachtenim, make a home of for the divine in this material world. So we have to, number one, be tachtenim. Tachtenim is Eser. We have to permeate and infuse the 10 with godliness. But you want to bring in godliness, not just that's commensurate, Malakalam into the 10, you want to bring in Kesed, Hamshach of Kesed, of transcendence, that which is Lamaila Me'elamus into Elamus. So it's Hamshach of Yud Aleph into Yud. Yud Aleph, we know, is of course the Rebbe's birthday is Yud Aleph. The Rebbe's Nisias formally began in Tovshin Yud Aleph. And what's the Shlemus of Yud Aleph? The Rebbe says twice Yud Aleph, 22. The Rebbe's Yartzeit. And twice means that you don't just have the transcendence of Yud Aleph into Yud, you have twice Yud Aleph. So there's the Yud Aleph in the Yud, and then there's Yud Aleph, and there's twice Yud Aleph, as he explains there at length. So bottom line is that Ebbetson, especially in regard to her father, Friedrich Rebbe, of course the Rebbe plays a role here, a critical role, is taking the world and first bringing Elokus into it as much as possible. And then bringing in the level of the Hamshach of Yud Aleph. Now Yud Aleph is not just one. It means L'mayla Mishtalshlus. We say 11 because we don't have another way of expressing it, but it's really a completely new paradigm shift. And that's the connection. That's why in Tov Shemem Ches, indeed, a new stage began. That's how the Rebbe explains it in the Sikh. That's the connection to 11, 11th month, Shvat, which is also Yud Shvat. But Yud Shvat is the 10 and within 11. Chov Beis Shvat is the 22, twice 11 within 11. Okay. Since we're talking about this, and we're coming from Yud Shvat, which is the same month, of course, a few weeks earlier, so the question was asked, is there a connection between the Basi Lagani Maimer and Chamisha Asa B'Shvat, the 15th Shvat, and Chav Beis Shvat? So most likely, as you think about it, obviously I should say, Lagani, Bosi Lagani, a garden. What's Tu B'Shvat, Chamisha Asa B'Shvat, rather, is a time of a garden. Yes, we have the seven minyan, few of them are the necessities, but many of them are the fruits of pleasure that associate with the garden. You plant the garden, you plant trees. So that's the most obvious connection. What it means, Beruchnius, it means the whole purpose, as explained in the Maimer, Basilegani, is to transform this world into a garden. And what's a garden that bears fruit? trees that bear fruit, generations. Both the fruit from the directly from our efforts and the fruit of our fruit. So all that is alluded to in Basel Gani, and that's a direct connection to Chamisha Asa B'Shvat. Chav B'Shvat, the Rebbetzin and the Rebbe, though they didn't have biological children, but my saying Shal Sadikim is Maisim Tevim, tell the same Shal Sadikim, I should say. The children, the offspring of Sadikim is Maisim Tevim, my Peda Mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are the fruit. And as the Rebbetzin once said, all the children are ours. Tamidim Nikroim Bonim. Shenantim Levanech Ela Tamidim. The children are called, the students are called the children. So all the students of the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin together. The fruits from the Gan, from the garden. So there you have the connection and also the lesson to us. That's what we need to do. As fruits, we have to continue bearing. Eitz Pri Esa Pri. Pri-esa-pri, a fruit creating another fruit, ad infinitum, forever. I'll add one more thing. Chaya Mushka, the name that Rebbe explains in that very sicha, that there's making a dira betachtenu. That's a dira. A dira means a home, but it doesn't tell you what kind of home. Then there's a dira, no, a beautiful home, similar to a garden. Chaya Mushka, both names represent that. Not just building a home, a shelter, a place that protects us from the elements, where the divine is there. But I didn't know, marchiva daita shlodim, that expands our minds, our souls, our beings. Chaya is vitality. Chayas. Mushka from the musket, from one of the ketores, spice, beautiful aroma. So you could have a home, but you don't feel necessarily the chayas and the vitality or the aroma. Both those things add a dimension that is a whole nother, that turns the home into a garden, turns the home into a beautiful place, as the Rebbe elaborates there. So let's now move from Chav Beishvat, we'll move to the Parsha. So we're now also in Parsha Yisrei, have Leb Midetzeit, living with the times. Yisrei, of course, the theme of Yisrei is Matan Torah, the marriage of heaven and earth. It gave us the power to transform this very material world and make it a divine home. So what does this week's Torah portion teach us in general, and what does it teach about today's war? So number one, it gives us the power. Torah gives us the strength. What do we learn from the central theme of this parsha? Matan Torah. So many more details, but Matan Torah is Dafka and Parsha Yisrei. And the question is why? Yisrei was a Kohen Midian. He was a priest of all other faiths. He came to discover that God Lata Mikol Alekim, God Lhavai, your God is greater than all the gods that he studied. And that's why his name was Yisrei. He added a parsha, Yisrei Ne'er Min Acheshech. He was necessary before Matan Torah. That's why Vayishma Yisrei, the story of Yisrei, comes right before Matan Torah. And Matan Torah is in that parsha by the name Yisrei, of all names. Because Matan Torah came to transform the world. Transforming the world, you have to transform it from within. Who's the best to testify to that? Yisrei. Because he was a man of the world. He knew all the ways of the world. He knew all the wisdoms of the world. All the schools of thought, all the mystical teachings. He said, God la'ata mikol alekim, God la'avai mikol alekim. He came to recognize that in all that, ultimately it's Torah. Ultimately God. And that's what Matan Torah teaches us. So the lesson today is once Matan Torah happened, the world has reached and fulfilled its purpose. The Gemara tells us that God made a condition when he created the world, that if the Eden will receive Torah, the world will stand. If not, it won't. So Matan Torah fulfilled, that's why it says, Eretz Yoreh V'Shekata, a land that trembled and then became silent. By Matan Torah, the world came to peace. Because till then it was still trembling. Will the Jewish people accept Torah? Which is the purpose. Bereshis b'shvil Yisrael b'shvil ha-Torah. Once they accepted Shekata, the world became quiet. Calm. In Matan Torah infused the world with power that no matter what would happen, now Elokus is now part of the world. It's not just the Gzeira ben Elyenim v'Tachtenim, that the divine Elyenim is L'Elyenim. Elyenim l'yordu l'mata and Tachtenim l'yal l'mayla. A schism between heaven and earth, between the divine and existence. Then existence has more so-called more strength. Not that divine is not there, but it's more concealed. But Matan Torah gave us the power that no matter what we deal with, you can transform. So even when you're dealing with darkness, even when you're at war, Torah is giving us power. Matan Torah was l'fisho, was temporary, how it affected the world. Now the Aveda of thousands of years since then has prepared the world for the Geula. So we have all the power we need, all the resources, all the ammunition, all the whole arsenal, spiritual and material, to transform, not just to conquer, not just to vanquish and eliminate the enemy, but to transform the darkness of the world. To bring out the deeper strength that comes specifically from the darkness. A few questions about the Parsha. Let's deal with them. Why were only 10 of the 613 commandments set at Sinai? Was God waiting to see if the Israelites were able to handle the first 10 without being too overwhelmed by receiving all 613 at the same time? So our sages talk about this, Chazal talk about this. So first of all, you have to know that all the mitzvahs were given at Sinai. Later in Parsha Bahar, well, first of all, Eila Mishpatim, Eila Meisif Al Rishenim, that this, just as the mitzvahs given by Matan Torah came from Sinai, so did all the mitzvahs come from Sinai. Parsha Bahar, similar idea said, Rashi brings. So it was all said. Moshe Rabbeinu was on the mountain for 40 days, 40 nights. Secondly, everything is encompassed in the Ten Commandments, Naseres Sadibris. As we know, from the Rasag, that all the letters of the Seres Adibris encompass the whole Torah and all the mitzvahs. Why were 10 said and not all said by Matan Torah? We hear Anochi Hashem Elokecha till the end, till the last commandment, because they are the central foundations. So the Eibishter wanted to establish the Klolim, and then each of them would break down further and branch out. So these 10 obviously have tremendous power, the two tablets, Ben Odom L'Mokim, Ben Odom L'Chavere, positive mitzvahs, the negative ones. So the positive, Anoichi, it says, is the root of all the positive mitzvahs. L'Yil L'Cha is the root of all the negative mitzvahs. So everything is there. But like in general Torah, you could ask the same question. Why did it take years for the Torah to develop the oral Torah and so on? Because all the klolim were given by Matan Torah. The foundations, the axioms, the basics were given. Then we have to unpack them, so to speak, and draw out from those into our lives. So it's a partnership. Hashem gives us the 10 fundamentals I mentioned before, the number 10. So Taka says, Aseres Hadibros is the root of the Aseres Ma'amoris, which was God created the world, the root of the, and it's all rooted in the 10 spheres. So the 10 Dibris is that structure. Then 11 is the power of transcendence, whether it's the Anoichi or it's however you explain it. Okay. Someone else asked a question based on a Maamar Chazal. If the 10 commandments frightened the Jews even when they heard it directly from God, how can we expect to embrace Torah Mitzvahs on an ongoing basis? If when Hashem said that says Adibis, we were so scared and ran away from Hasinah because we couldn't contain the revelation, then how are we expected to follow Torah Mitzvahs if we couldn't accept it when hearing it from the source, when it's Hashem himself? So first of all, the whole thing needs explanation. We also know that when they heard the Ten Commandments, it says, I'll call Dibur v'Dibur, every one of them was said, Parchen Ishmosim, their souls expired, and they just had to return it. So the first most basic thing is actually the other way around. It's because they were hearing it from Hashem. That's why it was so overwhelming. And they heard it through Moshe, through a filter, so to speak, or through a Mamutza Machaber, a connecting interface, a transparent interface. Then they were able to filter it. They were able to direct it. They were able to contain it, would be the right word. But the point is, we need both. We need to understand that Torah is not just here to fit into our, on our terms. The Eibishter was giving us Gilui Elokus, Chochmos v'Ritzenu Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, unprecedented. So it was intentionally, it's like a teacher begins to teach the students out of love, he'll share something that will be over their head. To the point, we wouldn't necessarily use the word frightened, that you get overwhelmed. Not overwhelmed to the point that complete annihilation, that's why even though their souls expire, they're able to return. But to feel that there's something awesome is happening here. So it's like an Eir L'mayla Ma'Kelim. But then the goal is Rotzei, to come into Shuv, back into Kelim. So in the Aseres HaDibros, both things were happening all the time. And the same things when we learn Torah Mitzvahs. It says, Ma'ala Halon Be'ema B'yira B'resa Subaziyah Afkan Be'ema B'yira B'resa Subaziyah. Just as then, when they received the Torah, it was Be'ema B'yira with awe, trembling, sweat. It affected them. It caused them, it physical affecting them. Afkan, when we learn now, we're not just learning a book. It should emotionally create passion, excitement, even to the point of awe, where it can be overwhelming, with the goal of internalizing and integrating it. So Torah and Mitzvahs is exactly meant to be that. Meant to be Torah is Eish, Eish Das Lameh. Torah and Mitzvahs is supposed to be like fire, like passion. But then that fire has to also be internalized and contained and integrated. Did the Jews accept the Torah with joy? Someone writes humorously that Moshe Rabbeinu tell Am Yisrael like a joke. He says the good news, he has the good news that he has 10 commandments. The bad news is that some of them are things that are not so easy to do. Okay, but let's talk on a serious note. Did the Jews experience with joy? Absolutely. There's great Simcha Gdela. With the same time with awe. It was a combination of Simcha and Yira. But at the end of the day, the Gemara tells us that that's why we also have Purim, to conclude and consummate, because in case there still be a Taina, that the Eibishter so-called imposed the Taina on them, so Purim comes, Kiblu, Kimu v'Kibla Yehudim, that there shouldn't be the Medor Rabba L'Araisa complaint that maybe God imposed it upon them with the mountain, that he took the mountain, Kofalem Harkigigis. Though the Alter Rebbe explains that was all out of great love. He was like, when you love someone, you embrace them completely. But still, you could say it was God's embrace. So comes Purim, Hoder Kibluho, where they accepted it now willingly, just to make it all that's completely internalized, is the point that I'm making here. Someone asked an interesting question. We're taught that everything Hashem commands us to do, he also does himself, including wearing tefillin, right? How is Hashem able to observe honoring one's mother and father? Kabbat Savicha v'Simecha. If, as far as we know, Hashem doesn't have parents, because Hashem just is, always was, and always will be. That's a good question. I never heard of that question before. That I didn't think of before. There is a Sforim that Samach Tzedek brings, that Rebbe Rashab also brings, that Samach Tzedek quotes from Sforim, Yisib Sforim. How is the mitzvah of Yiras Hashem? Avas Hashem. So the mitzvah is Avas Yisrael. The Eibishter loves us. But Yiras Hashem. We stand in a reverence of God. Where's the Yiras Hashem? And he answers, God is fearful of how we're going to behave, since Kol Kol Bidei Shemayim, Chutz Miyiras Shemayim. So that's an answer there. But how do you explain honoring parents? So you could say that the Medrash is talking, not every case, wherever it's possible. Here it's not possible. God doesn't have parents. But another, maybe an extra thought, and I'd love to hear from you. Maybe you have some thoughts on this. There's a question that's asked. We know in the Ten Commandments, the Ten, the two Luches, that the first five has been Odin Lemokim, between man and God. Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, Layilacha, Shabbos. The second five, Lisignev, Lisitzach, Lisinov, etc., is being Odin Lechavere, between man and man. Kabbadis Avicha V'Semecha is the fifth commandment. That seems to be between man and man, honoring your parents, which is a very sensible mitzvah, honoring those that gave birth to you, nurtured you, brought you up, sustained you. And why is it in the first tablet? So that question is answered with another question. What do you mean kibud av v'em? There's no shittuf in Judaism. There's no partnership. There's only one God. He created us. He gave human beings the ability to conceive a child. But it's not their child. It's God's child. You need the third partner. You need the neshama. And there's no shutfim. It's not like saying God and two partners he had, mother and father. So Chassidus answer is a beautiful answer. When you're mechabed your parents, you're not being mechabed your parents. You're being mechabed God that worked through them. You're being mechabed life, the life that was given to you. So your parents have this chus that they were chosen to be the messengers. But it's ben adam lamokim. You're honoring the life that God gave you through them. So it's not shutfim, they are tinnitus, they're channels. That's why it says honor, it doesn't say love. They could deserve love too. But honor, even the minimal, when people ask, how could I honor parents that don't seem to deserve honor? I've spoken about this many times. You're not honoring your parents, you're honoring the life they gave you. You don't honor your parents, you're not honoring your own life. And that's indeed the case. Many people who can't honor their parents, they feel themselves as shmatis, as nobodies. So at minimum, they brought life to you. Hashem brought life through them. So that's what you have to honor. That's why Leman Yarichon, that's why it says, among all the commandments, here, all the commandments, you actually have the reward. Long life. What does one thing have to do with the next? And why here is it mentioned? You get life because you honored life. So you live longer and healthier. So based on that, maybe, that the mitzvah of kibud av v'em is really the mitzvah of kavod Hashem. So how's Hashem mekayim that? So we know that in the Likus itself, we talk kosher k'kriyas yamsuf, a zivug. A marriage is as difficult as parting the sea. What do you mean difficult? By Hashem, nothing is difficult. The answer is because God created a shtalshlus, and he bound himself to those laws of nature that he himself created. So it's not really kosher, but based on that, he's not going to suspend nature. So you could say, in Elikus itself, there's the concept of kovid of a higher level. You talk about kovid tata, kovid ilah. So maybe the kibud av v'em is honoring deeper levels. There's the mamala kalaman of Elikus. Then there's chachman bina, is abba v'ima, chachman bina. So it's not that the Ebishter honors parents. It's in the Seder Shtalshlis, in the different dagas of Elikus, in Seder Shtalshlis, there's the kibud of av v'em, of abba v'ima in the Shtalshlis. And then there's higher levels of kovid, called kovid chupa, as explained in Likut HaTeira and other places. The level of kesa, and then higher levels. Perhaps, just to throw into this equation. Okay. Since we're still on the parsha, let's talk a few more things on previous parsha. Questions that came in. Will civil war break out among Hamas as it did among the Egyptians? If a civil war broke out in Mitzrayim between those who wanted to let us go free and those who wanted us to stay as slaves, can we predict on the eve of the final Geula a similar civil war will break out between factions of Hamas that want to continue the war and those who want to stop the war, and that internal dispute will lead to disunity and their ultimate downfall and our victory? I would definitely hope so. I hope it happens earlier than later. And perhaps that's what will happen. I hope it's happening already. And as I said, it should happen quickly. Well, I have to say on that. Okay. So then another question which goes back to Parsha Boy and earlier. Why did they lie to Pari about leaving Egypt for several days when they never intended to return? Can we learn anything from this in our war with Hamas? So we said we only wanted to go to the desert for 3 days to pray, when in truth we really wanted to leave Egypt and never come back. Can we try a similar strategy today and ask Hamas to release the hostages for only 3 days? And once we have the hostages back safely, we won't give them back to Hamas. Well, you could try. I don't know if it's going to work, but you could try. As far as they're lying there, so there's a lot of answers given. Some say he didn't actually say we're not coming back. He just said 3 days. Some say everything is justified. You're in the middle of a Holocaust here. They know what, whatever it takes to get the Jews out. Which is the most balbatish and simple answer. So you're not talking about regular times, you're not talking about lying. It's like telling a Nazi, let us just take them out 3 days, even though you never plan to come back. You do what it takes. So then in that case, lying is not lying, you're saving lives. And if anything is the opposite, it's because the world is so dark and so corrupt, you have no choice but to do something. You won't do what they do, but you definitely not have to tell them the truth of your plans. And again, if it could be used today, by all means, hopefully it can. I don't know if it would work, however. Okay. Next few questions. How does the mon, Lech Min HaShemayim, in the end of Parsha B'Shalach, manifest today in our lives? What is the man that we ate in the desert for 40 years? Do we still have any of it today? Can I go to a restaurant or another eatery and order some? No, not really. It was a unique, miraculous food that actually they couldn't even save from one day to the next, let alone later. The Mishmedas they saved, that was a miracle. But even that, we don't really have access to. See, this elaborates at length what the man was. It was to show our connection, that God protects us, that God sustains us. As we'll talk about in a moment, about from the Gemara, Yerushalmi, and so on. So the Reb Marash says that man today is parnasa. When a person recognizes and sees his parnasa, you see right away, like man min hashamayim, so much hashgacha pratis, why you suddenly got the deal and not someone else, a minute before, a minute later, timing. So man is an example for parnasa be'elam hazeh. Parnosib is manazeh, rather, I should say. That's really coming from Hashem's hand. So mon is a lesson to us. So even though we have lech min ha'aretz today, that we do bread from the earth, that we do have to harvest and we have to toil and so on, but there was once lech min ha'shamayim during the wilderness, when they were in the wilderness, to show that all sustenance really comes from above. And Chassidus talks about lech min hashamayim, mamayla lamata, lech min ha'aretz, mamata lamayla. And that you need a combination of both. Shabbos is like the level of lech min hashamayim, man. That's why on Shabbos, man was produced, even though it came down each day. My name is Baruch and Kuli Yemi from Shabbos. The blessing for the man for the whole week was given, was bestowed. But let's now go to the next step here. Someone asks, why isn't it customary for Chabad to say Parsha Saman, even though Talmud Yerushalmi says by saying it, it guarantees adequate parnosa? And the Alter Rebbe writes in Shulchan Aruch that it's a good idea, Teiv Lemer, to say it. And his reason given is that it reminds us that all parnosa comes from Hashem, just like the man came from Hashem. So there's actually an interesting sikha that the Rebbe spoke about, the Shabbos Parsha B'Shalach Tovshin Chav Gimel, 1963. Later, part of it was printed in Lukutei Sichos Muge in Chelek Chav Vov, volume 26 in B'Shalach. And there he brings all the different statements the Tur says from the Yerushalmi that Teiv Lehem is good to say because it says Gula for Parnos. The Alter Rebbe brings it in Shulchan Aruch, but he doesn't bring it in Siddur, it doesn't become a Minig. So there in the Sikhe, it's not in the Mugadika Sikhe, in the Hanoche, from Tavshin Chav Gimel, he says that maybe you can explain like the Arizal. Kisvi Arizal says, as Rachav writes, Rav Chaim Vital, that Arizal did not, said not to say it. So Alter Rebbe goes according to that, and therefore we don't say it. That doesn't mean we shouldn't think of it. And it doesn't mean, it still says Teiv Lemer, some people can say it. It doesn't say you're not allowed to say it. But it didn't become a formal thing to say. Akedah, yes. We say that every day, the Akedah, we remind the Akedah, but not the man. But the concept remains true. The man is a reminder that Parnosa comes from above. As a matter of fact, the Rebbe explains the difference, Madura Kama, Madura Tinyona. In Shulchan Aruch there, there's two versions, the earlier version, the later version, where the first one talks more Amuna, that it teaches you faith, the other one Betochen, trust, and other Shinuim in the language. You can look it up in the Kutei Sichos, Volume 26, B'Shalach. Which leads me also, there's a custom that they say there comes from, before I go on, the Rebbe does write in Igris Kedish, Chelik Yud Beis, Volume 12, page 18, that in Mishmeres Shalom, a Sefer Mishmeres Shalom, that in the name of Rav Pinchas Karitzer, that it's a merit to say Parshas Haman every day. So in other words, he encouraged to say it. But then we have from the Ramanach Mendel of Rimanov. He says on the Tuesday, on Yom Shlishi of Parsha B'Shalach, to read Parsha B'Shalach about a great merit as Gula to say Parsha Saman, together with Targum Onkelos. Again, it's not a custom we have, but it's just good to point out. But the concept, like the Rebbe speaks about Ani Mamin, we don't say the Yud Gimel Ikrim, but we think of it. So the idea of having this type of Amunah B'Tochen, absolutely. Okay, let's move on. Can we use AI to teach Torah and Chassidus? So someone writes it out in more detail. Let's read it like this. Dear Rabbi Jacobson, someone programmed an artificial intelligence computer with many Torah source materials and then asked the robot to teach Bosse Ligani Tavshil Chavdal 5724. That was this year's, corresponding to this year's chapter 14 in Bosse Ligani, and they uploaded it as a Spotify podcast as an experiment. I listened and felt it was amazing. It felt like being in college and having the professor teach the mimer with amazing college-level English vocabulary. It was so realistic that the computer even pronounced the Hebrew words it was quoting properly. Whoever made the podcast wrote a disclaimer saying that this is a robot, and it's not the same as learning it from a rabbi. My question is this new technology something we should shun because it's not a real human teaching the Torah classes, or should we embrace it, albeit cautiously, as a new method of teaching Torah and Chassidus? So I think we have to keep in mind something that Rebbe spoke about. You know, when the Encyclopedia Talmudis, which is a Talmudic encyclopedia, gathered together all the different aspects of Talmud and Halacha, so many said, you know what? It's something we shouldn't use. We're going to replace learning Gemara, playing Gemara. The Rebbe said, no, the opposite. Same thing with indexes. We used to search for things. Push a humanly search. Now we have an index. And the Rebbe himself was so involved in indexes. So the Rebbe said, adarab. We have to use all these technologies, relatively speaking, that was technology, and then use the extra time now to go deeper into Torah. The story with the Tzemach Tzedek. Alter Rebbe once wanted to give him a gift of Torah, and he refused because he said, you gaita metzasi. You have to exert yourself to gain Torah. You don't get it as a gift. Later, he regretted it because Torah is arucha meretz midah v'rechava miniyam. Torah is infinite. Whatever the Alter Rebbe would have given him, now he had, and then he could use his exertion to go further. So I would say the same thing here. The fact that we use Google and we use search engines, so now the next level of AI is help us as tools. You have to know it's tools. Then by all means, if it could help, great. However, you don't worship your tools. You don't confuse tools with a teacher. At the end of the day, somebody programmed it. Fine, the programs can be wise enough and they can even figure out things on their own. By all means, to use it. But always remember that it's a human being that's responsible to learn Torah. And learning it from a person who's a mashpia, not just that he's a person, the Dugma Chaya, an example, he could talk to you words from the heart, even though I'm sure they'll create robots like that too at some point. But it has a dimension, so I think it's important to understand the context. The very idea that something can gather together and give you a good class could save time. And remember, all the data again came from sources. It's not the machine made it up. But at the same time, again, you have to take a measure, remember, not to replace. Like the Rebbe said in Tovshin Yud, he said he had college students who came in to see him. And they asked the Rebbe a lot of questions. One of them they asked, what is a Rebbe? And they took out their notepads and they started writing notes. And the Rebbe said, when they left, he said, "Nu, zeh ma papir ne Rebbe. They have a paper rabbi." Same thing here. A paper Rebbe, I should say. So we want to make sure it shouldn't be a robotic machine. That's the key thing. But the tools, the use of it, by all means. Okay, as always, we run out of time, and there's more to talk about. I'll just talk one more thing. Is it dangerous to send our children to college? So with all the turmoil up here, people's going on colleges, what we've been seeing in the last months. So someone writes, I was once read the Rebbe said it's not a good idea to go to college. I always respectfully disagreed because I felt going to college was a path to a good job and financial independence. But seeing how every college across America currently looks like, 1930s Berlin, with open acts of anti-Semitism from other students and from their from the professors, and the deans allow these attacks under the guise of free speech, it's utterly shocking. And it's clearly unsafe for Jews to enroll in college. One thing is for sure. I will not allow my daughter to go to college. I'm not sure what the other options are, but we will figure it out. Well, I would add, yes, the Rebbe spoke about college for many reasons, including the environment, including what they teach. The Rebbe spoke about the moral deterioration and corruption in these universities. So, yeah, now you see it. Now, this is not an attack on knowledge. It's not an attack on study, on education, on. But remember, it's in the context. And you can see how professors can become so corrupt and use all their intelligence in this most disturbing, the most decadent, I would say, way, most obscene fashion. So thank you for that. Okay, I think with that I will conclude. We have more topics to cover, but time is limited. So this has been My Life Chassidus Applied, episode 482. May we use Chav Beis Shvat properly, and then from Chav Beis Shvat go into the next Tkufa, going to the month of Adar, Marim Besimcha. This year is a leap year. I was going to talk about that some more, but I think I'll move that to next week. Talk about Mashiach and other things that are very critical topics. But as I said, limited time. So let us now conclude. Everyone have a very good week, a very happy week. May the Eibishter bless Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Asher Eina Hashem Elokecha Bo Mereish Hashanah V'Achri Shana, only with peace and harmony. And finally, have the Gula Amitis V'Hashleima. And let us do our part. Every act, every good word, every good thought tips the scales and brings personal and global redemption. Be well. We're here every Sunday, 8 to 9 p.m. Kol Tov.
This program is brought to you by My Life, Chassidus Applied. Please help us continue our programs. Make even a small contribution at chassidusapplied.com/donate.